This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox in for Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, President Bush bashes Congress and the Attorney General's office gets its wings clipped. Plus, refugee camps in Darfur are now turning people away. Joining us on today's panel are E.R. Shipp, professor in journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication, John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy, and Jeff Obafemi-Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle. Hello, everybody.
Good morning. Hey.
We've got some interesting stuff to talk about today, so let's get inside the Beltway right away, where there are new developments with President Bush and the democratically controlled Congress at odds over whether and how top administration officials will testify in the probe into the firing of U.S. attorneys. Now, add to that, the Senate majority just yesterday voted to end the attorney general's ability to appoint staff attorneys without their consent. All of this comes as a backlash to Gonzalez's firing of eight federal prosecutors. Now, he did get a phone call of support from President Bush, although the president originally said he was unhappy with how the Justice Department handled the firings. Now, though, the president's ire is pointed straight at congressional Democrats.
We will not go along with a partisan fishing expedition aimed at honorable public servants. The initial response by Democrats unfortunately shows some appear more interested in scoring political points than in learning the facts. It will be regrettable if they choose to head down the partisan road of issuing subpoenas and demanding show trials when I have agreed to make key White House officials and documents available. I have proposed a reasonable way to avoid an impasse. I hope they don't choose confrontation. I will oppose any attempts to subpoena White House officials.
Well, John McWhorter, looks like a showdown to me. I don't see a compromise, do you?
No, I don't really. This is interesting because Bush's kind of tepid support last week was generally what is known in Washington speak as an indication that Gonzalez should step down. I've seen this enough over the years to be able to tell. He's not going to say Gonzalez should step down, but there are things that the people on top say. And it's apparent that there was some kind of huddle late last week, and so he and his people have decided to stand their ground. And it's unfortunate because the little olive branch that they're offering is not nearly enough. Obviously, for example, Karl Rove and Harriet Myers do need to be brought up and subjected to the withering kind of scrutiny that could really get at the truth. The administration really have egg on their face on this one because there are just no two ways about it. There are no multiple truths. They abused the power that they were given in being able to pick those attorneys back then. Nobody would have anticipated this.
Well, E.R., I heard Senator Charles Schumer, who's a member of the Judiciary Committee, say on television last Sunday that Alberto Gonzalez would not last the week. Now, here we are halfway there, but so is he. How long is he going to last, though?
Well, this is interesting because it's a political theater being played out here. Kabuki maybe? It's something going on that we don't know the outcome, but we kind of recognize the play. We recognize each side having to take a stance. I think Bush is trying to play to his whatever's left of his base. And you can hear it in the buzzwords he's using. There's kind of subliminal messages. This is a fishing expedition led by Democrats, of course. They're going after honorable public servants, Republicans, of course. And these are show trials that they want. So he's trying to send a message out to those people who are beginning to defect from him, mainly because of the Iraqi war. But he's trying to send signals that will hold into his camp those Republicans who are beginning to criticize him on the war. So he's forcing their hand as much as he's forcing the Democrats' hand.
Well, Jeff, this is a president who's never had to, in his tenure, deal with a hostile Congress. How's he doing so far?
I don't think he's doing pretty well. You know, when you're not used to having to deal with a particular opposition on the other side, you don't develop the tact and you don't develop the ability to actually bridge gaps and to make things happen. So I think he's showing now that weakness. And I think that it's going to come back on the administration here at a time where Bush is at least trying to preserve some kind of legacy. If you think about what's happened since 9/11 with the Iraq War, what's happened since the Patriot Act, which actually brought this whole issue to fore by giving the president the opportunity to just select without Senate confirmation these attorneys. These things have contributed to a misleading presidential power, especially when it goes to Bush. It kind of has created a cowboy with a rope environment. And now what's happening is people are demanding their freedoms back, and they're demanding their right to be self-determining and to participate in a political process. And now that Congress has flipped, the legislative side has flipped, Bush doesn't really know what to do. He seems like a fish out of water. And now the strategy as a cowboy with a rope is, well, just pick a fight and dare people to do something. And so
I think
it hurts the country.
Jeff,
yeah, go ahead.
Keep in mind that the vote to revoke this unlimited power to appoint U.S. attorneys, the vote was 94-2. So there were a number of Republicans voting for that revocation also. So
he's got
a problem.
Absolutely. You know what the only issue here is basically at this point? Either there is some sort of sealed envelope that the Bushies have access to that the rest of us don't that justifies all of this behavior, and we're not going to know it until they're out of office or people start writing memoirs in 20 years. Or we're dealing with a bunch of mediocre, childish, brittle people who just don't want to admit that they're wrong. And unfortunately, I think with this one, we can pretty much conclude that it's the latter, and that's the tragedy of all this.
Let me follow up on the point that
might be both.
That you are all making with this question, and whichever of you would like to respond to it is fine. We knew that there would be congressional battles with the White House, with the Democrats in control. We've already known that, especially over issues like the war, over spending, over immigration, and the list goes on and on and on. But now, add Libby, add Gonzalez, add Rove. Is this more than even the president bargained for?
Well, it's distracting us in many ways from looking at the bigger issues, the war on terror, the war in Iraq and in Afghanistan, by focusing on these pretty much inside the beltway issues. As I said before, it's kind of political theater, but all the big issues that should have been debated by now are kind of falling by the wayside as the various players do that thing.
So this is good then for President Bush in that scenario. Potentially.
In that scenario, yes.
You buy that, John?
No, I think that actually the main problem here is that I honestly don't think that our president is somebody who was one for thinking ahead. This is someone who thinks in broad strokes. And if things had gone better, we'd think of him as a kind of hero, as prescient, et cetera. Things did not happen to go that way. I think that people like, for example, Cheney, who I think is more of a details man than President Bush, are surprised at the number of things that have blown up in their faces. But then there's an extent to which you get the feeling they think of the public as, you know, nattering nabobs, as it was said in a different context back in the day, mm-hmm. that somehow there's just something that we don't know. And I would love to see what it is that we don't know, given that it's rather clear at this point that there really might not be much of anything.
But even if there isn't much of anything, I think it's an issue of respect and the presentation of what's going on or isn't going on. It's interesting that ER invoked Kabuki as an example of a theater, because that's a Japanese drama that males mostly perform, and they use very exaggerated gestures and body movements. And that's what's going on here. I think the other side of this issue, when the legislators speak, they have a legitimate concern. I heard it expressed on CNN last night by one of the leaders that said that they're tired of the private, off-the-record briefings that Karl Rove has been giving or Harriet Myers has been giving. There's no transcript. There's no record of it. Mm-hmm. And Bush is saying, well, I'll make them available, but it's going to be in the exact same way. So if you have something to hide, if you don't have anything to hide, then you wouldn't mind people being put under subpoena, under oath, where they can tell things and there would be transcripts. And I think that's what the issue is. Why can't we just get somebody to take account, be accountable for what's going on here?
All right. Inside the Beltway, the latest reality show. We'll keep our eyes on that one. You're listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. In case you are just tuning in with us, we're on the roundtable today with E.R. Shipp, professor in journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication, John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy, and Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle. All right, let's move on to another topic. Camps for Sudanese refugees are almost full, according to the United Nations. More than 80,000 people have already fled violence in the region so far this year. Refugees are being turned away from several camps because of lack of necessities like water. The suffering of millions has been well documented in the media, of course, since the beginning of the conflict in 2003, and yet Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir spoke to NBC News this week and said the stories we're being told that we are being told are slightly embellished. Now, we have a clip of this interview, but I want to warn you that what you're about to hear is not the voice of Bashir so much as the voice of the interpreter.
Yes, there have been villages burned, but not to the extent you are talking about. People have been killed because there is war. It is not in the Sudanese culture or in the culture of the people of Darfur to rape. It doesn't exist.
Now, President Bashir disputes claims that 1,000 villages were burned and violence for the 2 million displaced people is out of control. So far, the Sudan is resisting, of course, plans to bring 20,000 more troops into the region to help with the task of peacekeeping. So that's the table, ER. There is such a thing as plausible deniability, but given the fact that Bashir was shown photos of burned camps during this interview, and when he looked at it, he compared it, believe it or not, to photos of sites of weapons of mass destruction to attack these photos' credibility. But it seems this plausible deniability to me is beyond that point.
Yeah, it was rather surreal, but it was an interesting tactic to use. He didn't really, and I saw that NBC show also, by the way, he didn't really seem to acknowledge the photographs he was being shown. But he automatically said, but what about what Colin Powell said at the United Nations and blah, blah, blah. And he went off on that tangent. It was rather surreal. And what's going on in Darfur has been documented in so many ways that either he is like George Bush, out of touch with reality, or he is just a liar. And it could be a combination of both. He says civilians have been killed, but it's a war. What do you expect? Women and children are not being harmed. It's outside of our culture to rape, but there have been camps where people are treating rape victims who are women and children of both sexes. There are people whose arms have been chopped off, who've been burned, who've been tortured, and he is saying this is not happening.
It's crazy, John McWhorter. I'm not sure what to make of, first of all, the situation is a terrible one, but what do you make of a person who is in charge of a nation where this occurs and that person just simply denies that any of it is taking place in the face of completely contradictory evidence?
Well, you know, there's one lesson you can take from something like that, which is that it teaches you that as hideous as our nation in the first world can be, at least we're beyond that. It shows the value of, frankly, and I hate to be harsh about Bashir and his gang, but the Enlightenment, about empiricism, about certain ideals of humanity. You can talk about Guantanamo, but we have an entire thinking class that now realize the truth, even if Bush and 16 other people deny it. And in general, no denial of something so patently obvious could go on in our country. So it shows that there are some things that we can like about ourselves. But as far as Darfur, the most interesting thing these days is the current issue of The Atlantic, where Greg Easterbrook argues that what is actually driving the wars there could be traced to global warming, which we have a direct responsibility in. And that can make the Darfurians, I think, more proximate and human to us than they often are. We have a stake in that perhaps if we had not had our Industrial Revolution, they would not have their wars.
I read that article, and it was fascinating, and it does make an interesting connection. Here's my question for you, Jeff. We have a situation where Bashir has thumbed his nose at the United Nations, continues to do so, and the evidence is mounting of the atrocities taking place within the borders of Sudan. And yet, nothing really seems to be done about it. What can be done, what should be done, and who should do it, and when should they get started?
I think that's the question that's been troubling a lot of people, Tony, for the last several years that this has been going on. No matter how you debate it, I think there are some things that are not debatable. We know that there are 80,000 people who are displaced. We know that there are 2 million people, not 200 people, but 2 million people living in camps inside Chad and Sudan. And we know that at the very least, 200,000 people have died. We hear these numbers and we say, okay, 200,000, 100,000 people. We hear this reported in the news every day. But these are 200,000 living individuals, two NFL football stadiums full of people gone.
The population of Jersey City, right.
Well, exactly. When you start looking at it in terms of putting a face on people, you realize that this is a horrible atrocity. The UN has to do something. I think the United States governments, I think the African Union, I think everybody is called on to step up in a moral sense. Now,
you
I'm
know
the first
what?
Person.
China may be a solution. China is
That's
doing increasing business.
Yeah.
You can see that parts of the Sudan look like you're living on the Riviera or something. It's wonderful. It's luxurious. They're getting lots of money in from places like China that are trying to woo them in order to control the oil. So if China were to decide that something has to happen, I think it will.
That's an interesting point, and it's a good place.
Even if it's a peacekeeping mission, I think that's needed more than anything else. I think that the whole quest of for self-determination that we understand as post-colonial Africa is getting in the way of being able to get international help for fear of interference by foreign governments. And that's always one of the downsides of getting other people to come in and assist. But I think something has to be done. There has to be a balance struck in this process or more people are going to die.
We got to stop right there. Appreciate it. E.R. Shipp, professor in journalism, Hofstra University School of Communication. John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy. They were in our New York Bureau. And Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle in Nashville, Tennessee at Spotland Productions. Everybody, a good roundtable today. Good points. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks. Happy spring.
Same to you.